Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Addisk, to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events for Monday, February 8th, 2016. Good afternoon, Al.
Hi, Melody.
Well, gold hit an eight-month high today, and we touched briefly at 1,200. And silver had another awesome day, and most of the world's stock markets are under a lot of selling pressure, as we saw the Dow earlier in the day. But it did recover quite a bit, as usual, for the last hour of trade. And oil was down once again today, but everything is being blamed on the lower oil prices. But let's go ahead and get the numbers for the for gold and silver today. Gold was, we're currently looking at the New York spot after hour trading, up 1670, 1190.20. I think the actual futures earlier showed 1197 as their close, but we did touch a high of 1201. And that is a very key number. We need to see it close above 1200, as 1200 is is the next breakout objective, 1200, folks. Silver up 32 cents, 32 cents for 1543. Platinum was up 16 bucks at 931. Palladium was up 12 at 519. USDX today was up earlier in trade, but had a reversal, 0.23 to the downside at 96.74. Crude oil, you know, it's down, but 0.73, still at 30.16. And the paper markets today, we have the Dow down 177 points at 16,027. The NASDAQ was down 79 points at 42.83. 1 point, that was down almost 3%. The S&P was down 26 at 18.53. Chinese markets, the Shanghai is closed for the week because of their new year. So next week could prove to be very interesting, or, you know, perhaps this, did I say week or year?
I think you said week or year.
Did I say week or year?
Mm-hmm.
let me
give me that.
Well, you know what?
And you say both. right?
I went to my
you
new
say both.
Screen.
I said, is it A or is it B? You say both, okay? Now I said both.
I went to
What's
my.
What's good for the geese is good for the gander, or vice versa.
All right. I went to my new screen to get my new numbers, and it just kind of threw me off. So anyway, so 10-year yield, I'll go back to my old screen. 10-year yield, 1.74%. So people are out there, or your big somebody's scooping up the bonds. The euro, 112, up 0.25. You know, Chesapeake Energy, that was down earlier in the day by 50%. Now it's only down 33%. And Chesapeake Energy is a big company. It's owned by Donald Trump's buddy. Well, he's a big investor. He doesn't own it, but he's a big investor in Chesapeake Energy, Icon. And they're about ready to file bankruptcy. But, you know, it's funny how they'll still come out and say, oh, no, you know, they're not going to file bankruptcy. Not at all, you know. In one cheek, they're breathing and saying, you know, bankruptcy is not possible. We're not going to do it. But yet, you know, they're already talking to the people. Their stock's 2.03. And earlier in the day, as I mentioned, they were down 50%. And they've already did, they have their, what, $11 billion in debt that they can't pay due to these huge drops in oil prices. And they are one of the largest oil and natural gas companies, but they already did some restructuring on their bonds back, I think, December, the latter part of last year. And it's so funny then, it's like, oh, well, you know, now they freed up some cash and, you know, now they'll be just fine. And, you know, now they're going to, you know, be able to weather the lower prices in oil. And of course, that is not the case. But there was one report today about them talking to attorneys about debt restructuring, not bankruptcy, but debt restructuring. And that's when their shares dropped 50%. Let's see if there's anything else that I failed to report. Did the 10-year bond. Germany was down 3.3%. They were down huge. They broke through 9,000. They're at 89.79. London was down 2.75%. Both Japan and Hong Kong were up a little bit, Japan with being up over 1%. And the big discussions on why the European markets are falling apart is pretty much their banking. They are just truly getting,
clobbered.
You know, with the, yeah.
Clobbered is the economic clobbered. Term. Yes, clobbered.
With negative interest rates, and what do you expect? No profits, and you know, all the positioning as our banks have done. They have the region's banking gauge, the Stocks Europe 600 Banks Index, has logged 6 straight weeks of declines. Its longest weekly losing stretch since 2008. So it's very, very bad. Yes, Al?
You know, one of the things about this is Deutsche Bank has recently complained to the European Central Bank to lay off. They've got to give up on this quantitative easing. And the reason the bank is saying that is because quantitative easing with near zero interest rates or even negative interest rates and free money being handed out and the rest of this sort of thing, it is contrary to the interests of the banks. They can't make a profit. Right? Quantitative easing is designed to say to Joe Sixpack, here, we have basically free money for you. You can get free money from the bank. Well, that sounds like a great deal, but how does the bank profit by lending free money? And they are concerned. Deutsche Bank is in a serious bind right now, and they're complaining, and they're blaming the central bank, the European Central Bank. And they're saying, look, you got to stop this stuff so we can make a profit and get by. And they've got a point. And if, you know, the system is caught between the rock and the hard place right now, where if they raise interest rates and they stop shelling out free money, there's going to be less money to be borrowed by the great unwashed. And that means there'll be less stimulus to the economy. On the other hand, if they continue to maintain interest rates near zero or even going into negative numbers, that should make it attractive to the average citizen to buy or to borrow money from the bank. If they keep doing that, they're going to put the banks out of business. So what are they going to do? And they're caught in that dilemma right now where they can't support both the banks and the public. So who's going to be supported and who's going to be sacrificed? And if you sacrifice the public, no stimulus. If you sacrifice the banks, who knows what happens then?
Well, they're taking the play out of our role book, and it worked for the U.S. to some degree because you were able, you know, you had the multinational corporations borrowing money, throwing it back into their shares, providing dividends and so forth, and there had been a little bit of a boom to the world economies. Nothing to brag about or to write home about, but there was breath.
They stopped it from collapsing. They didn't necessarily make it better,
right.
But they stopped it from collapsing. And
now,
when
Europe started doing it, there's nothing there. It is dead, and it is collapsing. Yeah. So it's not working for them, and you're right, it's putting these banks under tremendous pressure because it's not helping them at all. Their banking index is down 23% year-to-date compared to 13% for the broader Europe 600 index. So, and on top of that, Greek stocks, they tumbled today. They tumbled nearly 8%. The bank shares losing almost a quarter of their market value about the future of government reforms. So they're still having their little problems. They're still having their skirmishes and strikes, and the people are beginning to rear the tempers are beginning to flare once again over their pensions, and Tsipras is certainly having his problems, so you have a lot of problems coming, putting more pressure on those banks because of this Greek debt. So their stock exchange. They lost 9% last week, and their banking index also dropped over 24%. So I didn't realize that some of their banks had received recapitalization. So they were given some money in December. Uh-huh. And here we are in February, and
It may even explain the first couple of rounds of quantitative easing where they were handing out money to the banks that were too big to fail.
Yeah.
It may be the way they justified it. Look, we've got to knock the interest rate down to zero, and we'll give you guys some cash so you can get through these difficult times, but we've got to knock the interest rates down to near zero so the public will borrow some money.
Mm-hmm.
And it may be the way they bribe the banks. Just keep your mouth shut and you're getting over, so don't worry about it.
Plus, let's go to someplace else. Russia. Russia's central bank on Monday said it revoked the licenses of two more banks as part of the government efforts to consolidate the sector as the economic troubles mount. Russia's 67th lender by assets failed to adequately assess risks. And the Bank of Russia also said it had revoked the license of a smaller lender, Alta Bank. The country's 186th bank by assets, Alta Bank, had failed again to meet its obligations to creditors. Russian authorities have been trying to clear the banking sector of hundreds of fragile banks. And last month, they declared the country's 40th biggest lender by assets insolvent. And this bank did have some of the country's political elite in there. And so, again, folks, these banks are not doing well, and you cannot tell me that there is no contagion to all of these pressure and all these world banks that will not filter and flow into the United States. So you better do what you need to do while you've got the time to do it. And Al, there was also a report that I saw today that if you looked at the banking sector, the S&P 500 banking sector, since 1996, it is down, 65%,
That's hard to believe.
You have Bank of America for the same time is down 42% since October of 1996. I'm sorry, it was Citi's shares have fallen 65% since October of 1996.
Well, you know, that may explain why so many banks have been purchased by the bigger banks.
Mm-hmm.
The number of big banks is down to something like four right now, really big banks, and there has been enormous consolidation over the last decade or so, and maybe it's because these same economic problems that are facing the big banks were also facing the small banks, and the small banks couldn't weather the problem, wound up having to sell out to the big banks. But in any case, point being, banks are in trouble. And I'm not sure where the law stands right at the moment in terms of American bailouts. They've legalized bailouts in Europe. And I'm going to guess they're going to, if they haven't already, here in the United States, which means if you put your money in the bank and the bank gets into trouble, now we know this isn't likely to happen. There's only one chance in 100 million, billion, trillion that the banks, they're regulated by the government, you know, Melody, and they're insured by the FDIC, so there's nothing to worry about. Everybody stay calm. But if the banks do get into trouble, they get to take your money out of your deposit account to support the bank and keep it functioning. All right? Those laws have been passed in Europe. I know they've been considered in the United States, and I don't recall whether they have or have not been passed. I don't think they have, but the fact that if they're even considering those laws, it's evidence that they're expecting there's going to be a problem in the banking system. How many have you seen? What was it? Frank Capra, It's a Wonderful Life. Jimmy Stewart, Donna Reed. And it was A Wonderful Life. Mm-hmm. And the bank almost closes. Right? They go through, you know, they make the point in the movie that if Jimmy Stewart had died when he tried to kill himself, what would have happened? The bank would have gone broke, and the community itself would be devastated and wind up with a very dark future rather than what they might have had or what they did have so long as Stewart was alive to fight his way through. It's an interesting and, you know, sentimentalized view of the banks. I'm not here to advocate that the banks are good and wonderful citizens, but nevertheless, you can't go into during the Great Depression, one of the hallmarks, a lot of banks failed. And when they did, they took a lot of people's savings with them. The difference was they took it in bankruptcy. This time, they'll just take it, if there is a time. Well,
and
we are seeing evidence that we are exposed to danger. Your risk of maintaining your savings in American banks is growing greater. That's all.
And what makes it even more dangerous now is because so many people bank online. And, you know, those who have large amount, they can easily transfer money out of there very quickly. That's what these banks are so concerned about. And they've done things to prevent that from actually happening. But that's one of their biggest concerns is you can remove a lot of money from their account and their history. It's worse than people standing in line trying to get their money out.
Yeah.
It will happen very quickly when it gets to that, because I do believe people will become very concerned and withdraw their funds on a very quick basis. And the United States doesn't have to make laws, Al, you know. They just do it and then worry about the effect.
it gives the whole thing a certain air of legitimacy.
Yeah.
So, well, we've passed a law, and the law is that we get to take your wealth. You see? And now it's legal to take your wealth. It's not a bunch of criminals, gangsters, and treasonous whores up there running Washington, D.C. These are honorable men and women. Let's take a break for some commercial announcements. Melody and I will be right back on Financial Survival. Please stay tuned.
If you have a heart condition and emergency rooms and medical doctors are not an option, you need our emergency heart attack kit. 5 concentrated liquid formulas enter the system in 60 seconds to protect your heart muscle, strengthen heartbeat, increase circulation, relieve pain, and make breathing easier. When seconds count, you want all the help you can get with our emergency heart attack kit. Easy to use and portable in a 1-pound compact kit for your purse, briefcase, or car. Call Apothecary Herbs now for your emergency heart attack kit toll-free, 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International callers dial 704-875-8010 or order online at www.thepowerherbs.com.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it: to secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. Invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
American Voice Radio Network is heard on Galaxy 19 at 97 degrees west, transponder 23, frequency 12115, audio PID 2595. AVR is heard on the left side audio channel, and AVR 2 is heard on the right side audio channel. Remember, both AVR and AVR 2 are on Galaxy 19. Same network, double the choices.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm Alfred Addisk here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. Programs brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver. For all your gold and silver coin needs, and the market suggests that you do need some, right? Your need is growing greater as we speak. What's next, Melody?
I do have a 90% silver special today. It's $50 face value, a $50 face value, 90% silver, and the price on that is $665. It does include free shipping, and I did some comparisons online with some of the online sellers, and they are higher than, of course, my price. I didn't work it out percent. In fact, they're almost 2% higher than my price, which is a lot when you're dealing with silver. So $665 for $50 face value of 90% silver includes free shipping, 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. And now, prior to the break, we were talking about how the S&P 500 bank index is basically at the same level as it was in the fall of 1996. And for both gold and silver, you know, it certainly has done extremely better than what that has done. It has outperformed. So these are the kind of things when you're looking for a long-term investment, no matter what Wall Street, you know, brokers tell you, no matter what your banker tells you, no matter what your accountant tells you, truly, if you're holding something on for a longer-term basis, and now this is why we tell you gold and silver is a long-term purchase. You buy it and you put it away for these difficult times that we're rapidly approaching. Silver at that point in time in 1966 was trading between $4 and $5, gold and silver were trading between 400 and 500. So you can see how well gold and silver has both performed since 1996.
And they've performed despite government attempts to suppress the price.
Yes.
They've still performed well. While other entities that have been supported ultimately by Federal Reserve quantitative easing policies and so on, they haven't done as well. And more than likely, we're going to see the very same thing on into the future. And we'll talk more about that in a couple of minutes here when I think, I'm not sure if Melody has.
And really, if you looked at Bank of America back in 1996, you probably wouldn't have thought that it would drop 42%. You know, even prior to 2008, you knew they were going down, even with Citibank. 65% since that time is down. So, you know, they've even been hit worse than just what the S&P 500 bank index has done. And I just want to mention briefly this week, there are several reports coming out. We're going to talk about Janet Yellen. She kicks off her semiannual testimony this week on Wednesday to the House Financial Services Committee. And then it's followed by the Senate Banking Committee on Thursday. Friday, you have the retail sales will be reported by the Commerce Department. So it'll see how, you know, what they tell us the economy ended up in 2015 and see how much they pad the report. There's also a University of Michigan releases its consumer sentiment. That'll be an interesting one to see. And then late Friday afternoon, the Labor Department shows whether import prices declined for a seventh straight month in January. So,
and where did the economy end up in 2015?
Well, that report comes out, but down.
Well, I think they're going to tell us that it ended up in a round white porcelain bowl that has a water supply that circulates counterclockwise.
Well, the retail sales fell for December 0.1%, and they were up just 2.1% the year before. So, yeah, it's this is going to be the weakest year for sales growth, but everything's all right now.
Well, we're in a recovery.
We're in a recovery. Just listen to Mr. Obama.
Yeah. He'll explain it to you.
He'll explain it to you.
And if he can't, Hillary can. This is a recovery. You see? I've got an article here from Zero Hedge, and just speaking of gold, says gold surges to four-month highs. Gold is now up over 13% from its pre-Fed rate hike lows, having surged through its 200-day moving average by the most in 2 years. As bank risk spikes globally, it appears that bond and bullion are the investments of choice once again in the face of systemic fragility concerns. At four-month highs, gold is nearing
high.
Pardon me?
It's actually an eight-month high. Well,
this is what he says at Zero Hedge. At four-month highs, gold is nearing a crucial breakout point. And he points out that we've busted through the 200-day moving average. It's not the only time it's ever happened, but it's still significant. You cross that, and it should be, it can be, and it's the biggest breakout past the 200-day moving average we've seen in several years. It's evidence that we're on the beginning of a bull market. Not proof, but it's evidence. Here's something from Bill Holder. Gold is up over 13% this year, and mining shares are up a crazy 45% in just 2 weeks. Something very big has changed. Holder believes that big money understands that no effort at reflation can work this time. That's what happened. That was what quantitative easing was all about after the Great Recession of 2007, 2008. They worked to reflate the economy by causing inflation, which they didn't really succeed in doing. They didn't get much inflation, but they did prevent us from going into deflation, which probably would have collapsed the economy into a national depression. They prevented the depression, but they were still mired in the recession. Again, he thinks big money understands no effort at reflation can work this time, as we've passed point of no return. We are seeing gold move higher because it can't default when the entire system defaults. So what he means is when everybody says, when we finally reach the moment that the government has to admit that it can't pay its bills, and not just the government. The government, I'm talking about the national debt, and the government's going to say, oh, by the way, we're not going to be able, we're going to have to restructure. See, we're going to have to restructure our national debt just a teensy-weensy bit. Sooner or later, they're going to have to make that admission. Corporations are going to have to admit they can't pay their debts, and they'll be driven into bankruptcy and ruin. Private people, private individuals, they're going to be forced to admit they can't pay the debt. At least if deflation continues, that's where they're going to be. And Holter is saying when we see gold move higher because we are seeing gold move higher because it can't default. I can default. People can default on whatever debts we owe in terms of pieces of paper. Got a piece of paper with a signature on it? You can default. Your signature? You can default. You can move to have it restructured. You can play a bunch of word games with it. But in the end, if you can't pay the bill, you're going to default. And there's a good chance that this is going to happen on an almost universal basis. Again, Holder says when the entire system defaults. He goes on and says the deflationary event of derivatives blowing up and taking the financial system with it will also destroy the currencies. He's predicting that we are going to see currencies. The euro, the English pound, the U.S. dollar, Canadian dollar, maybe the Mexican peso. I don't know how far it's going to go, but it's going to be big and it's going to be significant. These currencies, if they default on the debt, he's saying that they will have to default on the currencies as well. Now, if they do, what's going to be left to that passes for money in this world? And it'll be gold and silver. And those who have it will have a medium of exchange where they're going to be able to get to the grocery store and buy something. Now, I'm not suggesting that you take an ounce of gold to the grocery store to buy, you know, a loaf of bread. That's not going to happen. But if you've got smaller denominations of gold and or denominations of silver, you're going to be able to get by. And he says, understand that all currencies, including the dollar, are credit-based. I'd say debt-based. It means the same thing. They will collectively collapse along with the credit and derivatives. Gold will be the last man standing as money will trump credit currency and will be seen as the only lifeboat available. And insofar as that's true, it means people are going to be screaming for gold and screaming for silver to protect themselves. And that means their demand will be up and so will the price. Again, that's from Bill Holder.
We got a caller, Jim, from West Virginia.
Hello, Jim.
I do. Melody, did I hear you say $500 face value junk silver for $650?
$50.
$50
face value.
$50.
Yeah, $650. Okay, let me explain something to the market. First of all, I've been fascinated with silver since I was a kid. Dad told me about Gresham's Law, that when ersatz junky currency came into the market, they would chase good currency, silver currency, out. So I sat there and hoarded silver as a little kid. And then later I had some silver certificates. He'd go to New York and he'd trade those, my silver certificates, for granulated silver. And I've still got some of it. And I've made things with lost wax method, cast silver things, silver plated things. And you mentioned that silver is industrial metal. I'm going to mention something else here. Okay, $800-some large valve at a mine in Virginia. Somebody cranked too hard on the handle, or snap. Oh, I don't want to tell you what they said, but shut down the mines. We're talking $50,000 an hour, folks. And so I just happened to be there, and it says, they couldn't seem to round up another valve. It was, oh, Lord, it was a Saturday, too. So everybody was flipping out. I was saying, let's take this thing over here. So we dragged this big old 8-inch valve to the shop. And we set it up, and where it fractured, I sat there and I took some 50% silver solder and my torches, and I wet it down each surface with silver, and it just spread like crazy. Silver solder is amazing stuff. And so we've put both pieces together. Now, they were threaded externally and internally. So the issue is the threads still have to work. So I said to the other fellers there, I tell you what, let's do a little dance around this thing. You take your set of torches over here. I'll take mine over here. We're going to heat this bad boy and put it together. And they thought, yeah, Jimmy, you are blippity-blip crazy. Oh, well, I've heard that a lot. So we sat there and did a little dance around the thing. We're 180 degrees apart, back and forth. All of a sudden, it went down. I said, leave it alone. Quick, 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 leave it alone. And they were sitting there shaking their head. Yeah, right. That sucker is still in service today. Silver is an industrial metal. It is used in electronics. Now, because industry is going down, people say, well, silver will go down. No, I don't think so. Because it is necessary. It is consumed. There's not as much above ground as you might think. Now, something else. When silver was $1.38 an ounce per troy ounce, melt value and face value were one and the same. When silver hit $13.80 per ounce, troy ounce, then the face value, the melt value is 10 times the face value, okay? So 1.38 is, and you can go to the internet and see how much silver is in certain things. There's some nickels with silver in them too. But what you can do is you can go on the internet and find out the silver melt value too to verify what I'm telling you. But for silver people, I'm telling you right now, you better grab it because the junk silver is going to vaporize when things go berserk. But use that as your key. So, it's, Melody, if you're selling $50 a junk silver for $650, for crying out loud, people, get it while you can. Because when she goes zip through the roof, it's going to disappear. So I've had my little speech about silver. I do believe it'll hold its value. I think in the short term it'll overshoot gold and come back down. I think gold is what it is and silver is what it is. But the junk silver, I'm a proponent of it, and gold. But, you know, for basic day-to-day, keep that in mind. So if you have, if silver's like $18 an ounce, divide that by 1.38, and that'll tell you the multiplier for what its melt value is compared to its face value. Have I gobbled up enough airtime?
Not quite. I got a question for you about Gresham's Law. Gresham's Law is that bad currency will chase good currency out of circulation, and we've seen that happen. When they come up with phony money, it drives the good money, meaning gold and silver, out of circulation. But what if the bad money – but what happens – can good is there a reversal on Gresham's Law where good currency can drive bad currency out? You know, I don't know that this is just a one-way trip where only the bad currency can remove the good currency. And at least it seems to me that when the bad currency fails or begins to fail, it will draw good currency back into circulation. There's a two-way. To me, Gresham's Law, there's a two-way street on this, and it depends on overall circumstances. Sometimes the bad can drive the good out of circulation, but later on, when the bad starts to self-destruct, it will be time for it to draw good currency back or good money back into circulation. Do you agree, or do you think it's unreasonable?
100%. That's the first corollary of Gresham's Law, according to some of the different real economists I've read. Yeah, when the bad currency fails, then good currency seeps back into the system.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's something very interesting. Somebody said long ago, gold is the currency of kings. Silver is currency of the working man. Debt is the currency of the slaves.
Yeah, probably so right.
So, folks, what I'm trying to tell you is if you can't afford gold right at the moment, gobble up the silver, and the junk silver will disappear. It will disappear. I guarantee it. So get while the getting's good, and if you hear $50 face value sells for $650 Federal Reserve notes, don't let that upset you. Run the number yourself. Melody ain't making a lot on that, believe me. So, and something else, too, that... And there was that dime. One of these days, it's going to be worth more than $10. I'll let it go with that, folks, okay?
All right, Jim. Thank you. We appreciate your call. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom, and we will be back on Financial Survival in just a moment. Please stay tuned.
Job stress, financial obligations, or relationship problems have you feeling stressed out? When life is too much to handle, use Apothecary Herbs' emotional stress formula. Feel calm and more in control with herbs especially combined to provide the organic nutrition your system needs to help you cope. Complete instructions for maximum benefit and a money-back guarantee. You've waited long enough. Call Apothecary Herbs now. Toll free, 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International callers dial 704-875-8010 or order online at www.thepowerherbs.com.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom on financial survival. We've got an article here from Reuters, which Reuters claims to be an exclusive. They claim to have a source in India who is connected to Iran, and they have reported that Iran wants euro payment for new and outstanding oil sales. That's the headline. Iran wants euro payment for new and outstanding oil sales. And the article says, in part, Iran wants to recover tens of billions of dollars it is owed by India and other buyers of its oil in euros, right? Not dollars, euros, and is billing new crude sales in euros, not dollars. And they are allegedly looking to reduce Iran's dependency on the U.S. dollar following last month's sanction relief. A source in the state-owned National Iranian Oil Company told Reuters that in our invoices, we mention a clause that buyers of our oil will have to pay in euros. Iran has told its trading partners, who owe it billions of dollars, that it wants to be paid in euros rather than U.S. dollars. Now, this is to me, this is another triumph for the Obama administration. After spending months negotiating a deal with Iran, all right, and giving Iran access to $150 billion that had been previously seized, and alienating allies like Israel and Saudi Arabia, the deal was concluded about a month ago. Now, a month later, Iran strikes out at the petrodollar and pushes the dollar a little closer to oblivion. So we can all, from my perspective, I think we can all cheer Obama and say hooray, because the whole idea behind the petrodollar was that you could only use dollars to buy crude oil on the international market. And because you could only use dollars, the deal was negotiated in 1971 or thereabouts, the same time the dollar went completely off the gold standard, the dollar became implicitly backed by foreign crude oil. If you wanted to buy foreign crude oil on the international market, you had to have dollars. That demand allowed us to continue to push our worthless paper as if it were still backed by something like tangible, like gold. Well, what's happened since the Iraqi war, which I believe was precipitated by Saddam Hussein, said, I'm going to sell my Iraqi oil for euros, right? And the government said, ha, oh, the heck you are. We're not going to let that happen, because if we let you sell it for euros, other nations are going to want to sell it for euros. And the next thing you know, the dollar hegemony is going to be, it's going to disappear. And then the value of the dollar will completely disappear. And we're going to have a brand new currency. And we couldn't take that, couldn't stand that. And therefore, we invaded Iraq. Well, we crushed Iraq. We killed Saddam Hussein. But in the end, the Iraq and other nations began selling their, other nations for sure, started selling their crude oil for currencies other than dollars. Some of them even sold it for gold. And the result has been that the dollar's perceived value has been diminishing. And here we have Iran. After we cut this deal with them, that gives them $150 billion, if I recall correctly, and allows them to, on promises that they're not going to build any nuclear missiles, all right, which may or may not be honored. Here comes Iran. They turn around and say, oh, by the way, thanks a lot for that $150 billion. I think they've only collected $100 billion up until now, but thanks a lot for that. But we're going to stop using your currency. And when we do, it's going to damage, compromise the value of the dollar. Now, it's just, again, another triumph for the Obama administration. It's hard to know if they're just kind of, if they're just inherently unlucky, or if they're inherently stupid, or if they're inherently treasonous, I don't know. But to me, this is just more evidence of, guys ought to just go home.
What I believe in, this trade wasn't done just because of Obama's inability to make a good deal. I mean, this was done for a reason. There is a reason why they are able to sell their oil in euros and not dollars. And, it certainly would make our dollar weaker, which, perhaps that was the goal. But no, there's it's all part of the picture, I believe, with Russia and with China and the Saudis and Syria. I believe that it is all part of the same parcel. And because his agreement with Iran, it just doesn't even make sense. With the whole way that, perhaps he could have gotten more. Perhaps he did have some freeway, or his ability to do some trading with Iran and so forth. But it's not his deal. Obama is not smart enough to do deals.
The Art of the Deal. We ought to send him a book entitled The Art of the Deal.
I forget
who wrote that book. But I'm sure Mr. Obama would love to read it.
So what is truly behind this and allowing
Iran? Well, it may be
Iran.
That's not inflation.
Yeah.
Right?
That's my
By making the dollar weaker, they are actually generating inflation. The Federal Reserve has been unable to generate significant inflation with quantitative easing. Mm-hmm. And it may be that this is one way, this is part of a, right now, and if they are trying, finally, they're walking away from deflation after a year and a half or 2 years of deflation. They're saying, forget that. They're going into inflation, which means the dollar would have to fall on the dollar index, which it's doing. In theory, it might stimulate the economy. And when Iran says, guess what, we're not going to use any more dollars, technically that pushes us a little deeper into inflation. Is that why they're doing it? I don't know. It's theory. We can speculate. Maybe it's true. Maybe it's false. Shall we take a call from Art in Georgia?
Hello, Art.
Good afternoon. Can you hear me all right?
Yes,
yeah,
we can.
Okay.
No, we can't, actually. You're kind of going in and out, George. Are you on a cell phone?
No.
Okay.
Try it now.
I've been buying silver for several years now, and I get, I'll always look for quarters, nickels, dimes, 50-cent pieces, silver dollars, but I also buy bars. And I've always made it a point that to always look for the best I can possibly find. And so I'm trying to come up with an argument for and against quarters, nickels, dimes, 50-cent pieces versus 999 bars.
Okay, and you're asking us if we can provide that argument?
Yeah, how would you argue for and against, like, because I don't know, you know,
Here's my argument against.
People have their different opinions of which is better.
You know, bars used to be great when you could buy bars for a couple cents over spot. Even the premium on bars have risen unless you're buying large quantities of silver. So to me, unless you're one of those large buyers of silver, you know, the savings is not significant enough. And with bars, unless you buy the top brands, you know, then you come into, if you buy generic bars, you know, you get hit with the premiums and so forth. So it really does depend on why you're buying silver. What is your objective? Just to buy silver at the cheapest, lowest price? Or are you looking to do other things with it? So, but price anymore, people are looking to get as much silver as possible. That's great. And I think the one thing that you're doing is you're looking for quality. You know, quality is very important, and I believe coins are better quality than bars. You know, recognizability, acceptability. Now, you don't want coins that are so thin and slicked out, you don't know what they are. You know, you still want to keep that good quality. It doesn't mean you have to buy uncirculated. You know, but
when I buy coins, whether it be a nickel or a dime or a quarter. I have to be able to identify what it is. It's got to be in good condition. And I mean, if it looks like something that's been walked on, trampled on, and run over by a train, I don't want it. You know, I have to be able to.
Well, that's an important point.
That's a quarter.
The idea that you have to check to see what it is before you decide whether you're going to buy it or not is an important point relative to your silver bars. If you come up to me with a silver bar and say, Al, I'd like to sell you this silver bar, how do I know that it's not an aluminum bar? I've got to go through some testing that I may not have enough equipment or intelligence to perform before I can take that bar of metal. Yeah, I see you got a bar of metal, but what is it? Just because somebody says it's silver doesn't mean I'm a believer, and there's the problem. Those bars, I think, they're not trade items. What they are is something that can be sold to industrial concerns. Ultimately, the bars are not intended for private individuals to do business in. That may happen. But the real intent is I'm going to sell this to some corporation who needs silver to do whatever it is they've got to do, silver solder or whatever it is they have to manufacture. But if you want to take silver, if your purpose in gathering silver is to be able to trade it to ordinary people, to pick up a loaf of bread, a new truck, buy a piece of land. You're going to want silver in a form that they can recognize, and that's going to be dimes and silver dollars and whatever. And it tells to me, it says if you want to be able to trade that yourself, your best deal, if that's what you're looking forward to, that's why you're buying silver in the first place. I want to have something I can trade to the public. I think you want silver coins, and I don't think you want silver bars because you're going to be looking for rich people to buy the bars.
What's also nice about the 90% silver is that it is spendable. No, you don't want to go to the store and spend it, you know, for the face value. But in an extreme emergency, you could. If you needed to take a buck of it, of face value, and go to the local store and buy that loaf of bread so you could feed your kids, you know, you're willing to spend a dollar. They're willing to accept it. So you do have options. You have choices when it comes to 90% silver. 90% silver, it used to basically sell at the price of bars. It was very inexpensive. You could get a lot of silver for your dollars. But the premium also has risen on that because you can't find it anymore.
Well, here was my logic, and I don't think like a lot of people do. I'm always looking for quarters, nickels, dimes, 50-cent pieces, silver dollars, anything like that. I'm always snatching them up when I find them. And I always give a good price for them. It's not like I try to rip anybody off. But I went after some bars and rounds because I'm thinking, okay, 999, yeah, I won't be able to actually like walk into a store and, you know, buy a bunch of groceries with it. But because it's 999, this is something that as an investment I can tuck away, and in an emergency crisis situation, this is something I can take down to a dealer and say, look, I need to convert this.
Look, when people buy gold and silver, the first thing that you do is you're going to sell it into the market. And when you deal with local dealers, usually they're not going to give you the same amount as what someone that I can do that deals nationally, because I have access to the market. I have access to people who I have a lot of buyers, where your local store basically has the neighborhood. So when he buys something back, it might have to sit in his display case for a day, a month, maybe a year. So he's going to hit you really hard when you're selling it back to your local dealer. That's a disadvantage. And usually when you buy it from the local dealer, usually you're going to buy it for the same price as what I sell it for. So you're not getting any true savings on the buy side, and on the sell side, you're going to get hit really hard. And so, again, if you can't sell it back to him and you have to sell it to somebody else, you call me up and you say, hey, Melody, I got these, the bars. Well, you know, I don't know what they are. I don't know what they look like. Well, send them to me, and I'll lock up the price in when I get them. And market can change a lot in that time frame. It can take, 5-7 days for the package to get here, for it to arrive. So you have a time span that can be, of course, if silver is going up, a lot, it might not mean that much difference. But so therefore, that's a disadvantage when you're buying product that's not really, I don't know what it is. But if you call me up and say, Melody, I got 90% silver, okay, I can lock it in for you. What's your face value? What kind of condition is it? I can talk to you. I can get an idea of what that product is. I know my buyers will buy 90% silver, and so forth. So it's easier to liquidate than what those bars will be if you send it to somebody like myself. And again, if you deal locally, you won't get as much money for it. Lots of times these guys on the local corner, they don't have the cash flow, so they're going to hit you extra hard.
So I think in conclusion, what we're telling you is the silver bars, they have a certain amount of utility, but it won't be for local trade. You're not going to probably use them to buy a house, a car, groceries, whatever. You're going to want the coins, which are recognized by the public. We're out of time, folks. We have to go our merry ways. We want to thank all of you for listening. And we will be, Melody and I will be back tomorrow. In the meantime, the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, Frank, the producer, Jim from West Virginia, and Art from Georgia. Bye-bye.
I work all night, I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay. There never seems to be a single penny left for me.
Bless you, bless you.